Right, morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Sanhedrin is Zion Beis. We're in the eighth parak of the Masechta. We're finishing up the Sugya of Bensora Mara. We have a little bit of more Gemara to do and one more Sugya. And then we start the next portion of the eighth parak. That's Machteris, coming up a little bit later on this morning. Let's finish up. We learned yesterday's Daf about the Bensora Mara running away. So if it runs away before the Gemara Din, And then he's tried a later point in time. Remember, the window of opportunity for the Bensora Mara only goes from 13 to 13, 3 months. Could be even shorter, but for our purposes, let's assume that it's only a 3 month window of time. So if he's captured, he's caught as a Bensora Mara, but he doesn't get a Gemar Din until a later point in time. So then he's not going to be tried anymore. And the reason why is because had he been convicted at a later point in time, he wouldn't have been tried. So therefore, there is a clear, I'd say statute of limitations, but that's probably not the right way to describe it. But in other words, but because he's not tried during this window, so therefore he's not going to be tried later on. Masha Enkin, the Gemara says, is that if he was Nigmar Din during the period of Bensora Mara, and then he just happens to have run away before the actual execution, so then we can pick him up at any point in time later on and execute him. And the Gemara and Rashi used the language yesterday is because he's a Bar Katala. He's already basically a dead man. Okay, so that's what we did, and then it launched us into a discussion yesterday, a really interesting discussion regarding changing of status. Let's say a person did a crime while he was in one category and then moves into another category. Notably, like let's say, for example, the Ben Noach. Ben Noach does Megadiv, he does Gidov while being a Ben Noach, that's a capital crime, blaspheming against the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and then what happens is he converts. Okay, yesterday I suggested that the Beis Din who converted him could have done the research a little bit better, but okay. But he converted. And now as a Jew, so can he be tried again? For the act that he did while he was a Ben Noach. So this was the discussion that we had yesterday. And let's start from the Gemara again. And so we are on Ayin Alpha Amud Beis. And I'm just going to start right from the Gemara. It's a little bit less than halfway down the Amud. So Rabbi Chanina takes a very clear position on this matter, and he says he's going to be exempt. Why? What happens is that the din changes. Meaning, had he done Gidov as a Ben Noach, he did do Gidov as a Ben Noach, so if he was Megadiv as a Ben Noach, so he's subject to the penalty of Saif, because that's always the penalty for a Ben Noach. And meanwhile, if he did Gidov as a Jew, he'd be Chayv Skila. So it's a different penalty. So therefore, you can't try him as a Jew for that which he did while he was a Ben Noach. Name him Isaiah. So the Gemara says, so now our Mishnah seems to be very supportive of this position. Because Baruch HaShalom Nigmar Din V'Achar Kachi Kivz Zekana Tachtum Pater. Because our Mishnah says that if the Ben Soromor runs away before the Gemara Din, and then after the window of opportunity closes, we find him. So we can't try him, and we can't convict him. And why? Because change category. So the Gemara says, my time, Alam Misham Darmina, Ovi Shani Shani. So we say, oh, once he changes category, so he can't try them. And this would seem to be a very good proof for Rav Chanina. The Gemara says, it's not a good proof. Lo. Shani Hachadi, Avad Hashtalap Barketalahu. Gemara says, look, it's radically different. Because in the case of the Bensora Mora, after the window closes, he's not Chayiv Misa at all. That is significantly different than just simply moving from one capital punishment to another capital punishment. And so the Gemara says it's not a good proof. Tashma, the Gemara says, well, consider. So the Gemara talks now about the second half of the Mishnah, where if, let's say, he runs away after the Gemara Din, so then you can pick him up at any point in time later and execute him. And the Gemara says, after Gemara Din, that's no proof for anything. Nigmar Din Gavra Katalahu. Okay, the language we saw in Rashi, it's right here in the Gemara, that after the Gemara Din, he's a dead man. And since he's a dead man, so therefore he's not subject to the fact that we pick him up later and execute him, he's already dead. Just not physically dead, but in other words, but he's deemed as a dead man. Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, consider the following Ben Noach. Shikas Chavero, Uval Eshes Chavero, Vinizgayer. If I have a Ben Noach who either hits his friend or has an extramarital relations, and then he converts, Potter, he's going to be exempt. Asa Ben Yisrael, Vinizgayer. I'm sorry, Asa Kain B Yisrael Vinizgayer. If let's say he had an extramarital affair with a Yisrael and then he converts Chayiv, he's going to be Chayiv. So the Gemara says, so now, what just happened over here? V'amai, name a hovi shtani shtani dino, I'm sorry, hovi shtani shtani, So the Gemara says, so why don't we say over here that the status has changed? So umisa so beinan vahaidino ishtane misa so lo ishtane. So the Gemara, Chai v'amai name ahol v'ishtane ishtane. Dino umisa so beinan vahaidino ishtane misa so lo ishtane. So the Gemara says the din has changed, but the misa has not changed. The Gemara says, let's consider. The Gemara says, look, if let's say we're talking about he was a murderer as a ben Noach, so okay, so then I get it. Nothing literally has changed. Meaning, as a ben Noach, as a murderer, you're chayiv misa, you're going to get sayiv. Then when he converts, so then same thing. Meaning, as a murderer, he would get sayiv. So nothing changes. So the Gemara says, but here's what I don't understand. Meaning, originally, as the Ben Noach, if he committed adultery, so the punishment for him would have been Saif. And meanwhile, now, as a Jew, he's going to get Chenek. So the actual capital punishment changes. So the Gemara says, Benara Hamarasa, Di'i Divide Biskila. So the Gemara says, well, what happened was is that the Ben Noach had an extramarital affair with an Ara Hamarasa. You remember, we did a couple days ago, well, more than a couple, but we did over a week ago, that when a Ben Noach has an extramarital affair with an Ara Marasa, since for him it's not on the books, meaning for they don't have Erusin, right? They don't have the whole concept of Erusin. And so therefore, how is he to be judged? So not on using his books, but using our books, right? In other words, using our legal method. And so the Ben Noach, who has relations with the Nara Marasa, is going to be subject to the skila penalty. So then when he converts, the same thing is going to happen. Vaha asa ken bi Yisrael, dumya de'eshes chaver ketani. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that can't be the case of the Brisa, because the Brisa was clearly making a contrast between if he did it with a Ben Noach, or Bas Noach, versus when he did it with a Jew. Meaning what the Brisa was trying to do was create a contrast between those two women. It can't be talking about an Ara Marasa because for them they don't have Erusin. So we're not talking about an Ara Marasa. So the Gemara says, Ela bekala bechamura meshach sheikha. So the Gemara says, okay, so now let's introduce ourselves to another concept, and that's the following. You're right. If we're talking about a scenario in which he's going to get an upgraded penalty, so that you can't do when going from being a Ben Noach to a Yisrael. However, if as a Ben Noach he was going to be getting a harsher execution, and then post-conversion, he's going to be getting a lighter execution. Well, the lighter execution is incorporated in the harsher execution. And so that's what the Gemara says is why, whether Ben Noach, when he commits adultery as a Ben Noach, he's subject to Saif. Saif is higher on the list. So therefore, Saif has already included in it Chenek. So the Gemara says, Hanichal Rabban Adami Saif Chamor, El Rabbi Shem Adami Chenek Chamor Ma'ikal Amema. So the Gemara says, okay, so now this works out wonderfully according to the Chacham, but according to Rabbi Shimon, it doesn't work out because Rabbi Shimon has Chenek and Saif flipped. So now according to Rabbi Shimon, Saif's on the bottom. So therefore, when he was subject to the Saif penalty, there is nothing below the Saif penalty. So it won't work out according to Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon, Sevela Ketan Debe Menashe, Damer Kol Misa, Amor Levnei Noach, Enu Ela Chenek. So the Gemara says, so here's what we could do. We could have the Brisa work out according to Rabbi Shimon, but making one variable change. And that is, what is the Ben Noach going to be subject to the penalty of? So again, the accepted halacha is Saif. But there is Tana Debe Menashe who says that the Ben Noach penalty is always going to be Chenek. So now, if we subscribe to the Tana Debe Menashe, which is that the Ben Noach is getting Chenek, and if we subscribe to the Rabbi Shimon viewpoint, the Chenek is above Saif, so then it works out. Because then when he commits adultery as a Ben Noach, he's going to be getting Chenek, which included, subsumed in Chenek, is also going to be Saif as well. So the Gemara says, so that works out now well for Eishas Ish. So again, the Gemara says, what about the murderer? Where the murderer, as the Ben Noach, was subject to Chenek, again, assuming like Tana Debe Menashe, now as a Jew is subject to Saif. So the Gemara says again, if we're subscribing to Rabbi Shimon, that works out fine. Because Saif is subsumed under Chenek, Saif is below Chenek. Lema misayele, the Gemara says, okay, consider now the following brisa, which would seem to be supportive of this. Sarcha v'archa kach bagra, tito mechenek. The brisa is talking about an Ara Marasa, that during her Narus, so she committed adultery, and then afterwards she becomes a pogeres, tito mechenek. So how is she going to be tried? She's going to be tried with chenek. Meaning, despite the fact that when committing the crime, She was subject to skila. In other words, she hit all the qualifications to receive skila. She was a nara. It was during erusin. She had an extramarital affair. It should have been skila, but because she's only tried at a later point in time, so therefore she's going to be receiving chenek. So the Gemara says, "Biskila my time alol amishem dahovi shani shani." So the Gemara says, "Now why is she not going to be subject to the skila penalty?" So the Gemara says, "Because she has now changed her category. So once she changed her category, she's not going to be subject to the skila penalty. And once again, this would be a support for Rav Chanina. Now over here, we're talking about a change that is a permanent change, meaning that as a Bogeres, she's permanently changed to not being subject to the skila penalty. When we're talking about somebody who converts, we're talking about somebody who also is going to be making a permanent change as well. So the Gemara says, Ha'amar le Rav Yochanan letana tini tidon b'skila. So the Gemara says, all that's true. However, when Rav Yochanan heard the Braisa, Rav Yochanan immediately corrected the Amora who said over this Braisa. Rav Yochanan says that, no, that when it comes to the Nara Marasa who committed adultery as a Nara Marasa, even though she's not tried until a later point in time, so Rav Yochanan disagreed with the author of the Braisa, or the repeater of the Braisa, and he says that she should properly be tried with Skila. That even though her body changed, but her capital punishment is not going to change. And so therefore, that's the opinion of Rav Yochanan, and seemingly then Rav Yochanan would disagree with the position of Rav Chanina. Okay. That takes us to the end of that sugya, and let's finish up. We're on the Mishnah on the very bottom of Ayin Aleph Amud Beis, and this Mishnah really sums up the Ben Sora Mora and puts it into terms that we can at least attempt to understand why it is we're killing somebody for a crime that doesn't deserve the death penalty. Ben Sora Omar and Ido Nashem Sofo. So the Mishnah here gives us the calling card in terms of why it is that the Ben Sora Omar is put to death, because what we're doing is we're projecting his future actions. And yes, in general, generally speaking, this is something that we do not do, right? As I mentioned already once before, the kasha which everybody asks, which is the right kasha to ask, is that by Yishmael, so Akash Baruch Hu judged him by Sherusham, meaning in his current position. And not based on the future which the Malachim said to Akash Baruch Hu, you know how he's going to end up. But Akash Baruch Hu says, okay, but that's the future. That's not how I judge. I judge based on current actions. And generally speaking, that's true. But for the Ben Sora Mora, he's going to be judged not based on current, but on future. Okay, and that's, you know, it's obviously, it's challenging, but that's what happens. That's the idea behind the Ben Sora Mora. So is that... in theory, he could. But we don't give him a chance.
If he's a Jew, and this is not a Jew.
Okay, could be. It could be. Look, we can offer answers. What I'm saying, but it's the right question to ask. So Zaka v'al yamos chayev. Sorry, let me read that again correctly. Yamos Zaka v'al yamos chayev. So the Mishnah tells us that it's better that he dies right now while not having the preponderance of all these sins that are going to happen in the future. And better he should die now, sin-free, for the most part, than later on, where he has this addiction, he's going to need to feed this addiction, and he's going to end up not only depleting the funds of his parents, but then he's going to go to the crossroads, and he's going to kill people, as the Gemara later on will articulate. Misasim shorishayim analam v'anala olam. When a Rasha dies, it's great. It's great for him, it's great for everybody else. Rashi explains, great for him because he's not going to be sinning anymore. Great for everybody else because he was a Rasha. And tzadikim ra lahem v'ra la'olam. On the other hand, when a tzadik dies, bad for him and bad for everybody else. Tzadik, obviously, is building up his zechuyos in this world. Once he dies, he can't build them up anymore. It's bad for him. Bad for everyone else, says Rashi, because he provides protection for the generation. Now he's no longer alive. We don't have the Haganah. We don't have the protection. Yain v'shein l'rishayim anah lehem v'anah la'olam. As far as wine and sleep is concerned, it's great for the rishayim. Meaning, let them drink and let them sleep and less problems for the rest of us. Ulet tzadikim ra lehem v'ra la'olam. But however, sleep and wine, not good for the tzadikim. They should be learning Torah, says Rashi. They are not learning Torah. They're drinking, they're sleeping, not good. Pizah l'rishayim anah lehem v'anah la'olam. When the rishayim are scattered all over the world, fantastic. Good for them, good for the world. In other words, when you don't have a unified axis of evil, that's great. Great for everybody. Tzadikim ra'olam v'ra'olam olam. But when the tzadikim are spread out all over the world, so it's not good. In other words, they're not centralized, they're not fortifying one another, not good. Kenos, the Rishayim ra'olam v'ra'olam olam. When the Rishayim are collected and unified, bad. Bad for them, bad for the world. Tzadikim ha'na'olam v'na'olam olam. When the tzadikim are unified, good. Good for them, good for the world. Sheket l'rishayim ra'olam v'ra'olam olam. Peace and tranquility when it comes to the Rishayim, not good. Gives them time to conspire and put together a plan, an evil plan. However, l'tzadikim ha'na'olam v'na'olam olam. For tzadikim, it's good for them and good for the world. We turn to the Gemara on Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, top of the Amud Tanya. And the Brisa over here is basically going to be a repetition of everything we saw back in the Mishnah with a little bit more detail. Rabbi Yosef Glili Amr V'chim Im Nesha Achozer Tatim Rabbasa V'shasa Chatsi Log Yayin Ha'italki Amra Torah Yatzla Basin Lisakel. What sense does it make that he stole some money from his parents? He ate a little bit of meat. He drank a little bit of wine. And now he's going to be taken out to Skila? What is that? Ella Higia Torlasov Da'atosha Ben Sora Marishasov Migamer Nichse Avivu Mavakish Limudo. So what's going to end up happening is that because he has this addiction, he's going to deplete the funds of his parents. He still has the addiction. He needs money. He needs to fund his addiction. Venomotse, and right now he doesn't have any. V'yosel Parshas Drachim, so he goes out to the crossroads. Umalaste Mesabrios. And he's going to rob people. And if necessary, kill people. So better that he die now in a state of not having all these chovos rather than dying later and he has all these chovos. And then the Bryce is going to repeat everything we saw back in the Mishnah. I'm reading it quickly. Literally verbatim what we saw back in the Mishnah. See back in the Mishnah for an explanation of all that we just said. Okay. That ends the... That's good. That's an easy way to run through some daf. That ends the first half of the eighth parak of Sanhedrin, and the first four blot of the Masechta was dedicated to the topic of Bensora Umora, starting from the Mishnah on Samaches Amud Beis and running through Samachtes Ayin and Ayin Aleph in just a little bit of today's daf. So that is Bensora Umora, and now we are in the second half of the eighth parak of Sanhedrin, and we start now with the Parsha of Machteres. Do me a favor. I just want to borrow your Gemara for just a second. It's fine. I want the Pesukim. So let me introduce first with the Pesukim. The Pesukim in the Torah are found in Parshas Mishpatim, and I'm going to read the Pesukim. The Pesukim describes somebody tunneling into your house. Im b'machteres, right? Just this is a introduction. Im b'machteres imatze haganav. So now there's a ganav, there's a thief, and he's tunneling into your house. So v'hukav ames, and somebody strikes him down and kills him, ein lo damim. Well, he didn't have blood. Now, the he didn't have blood is a reference to the ganav himself, meaning basically at this point in time, he was already a dead man. So he's a dead man coming into your house, so by you killing him, you didn't kill him, because he's already a dead man. Next pasuk in the Torah, v'im zarcha ha-shemesh alav, however, if the sun's shining on him, damim lo. Then he has blood, shalem yishalem, therefore he has to pay for that which he stole, im ein lo v'nimka b'gnevasor. Now, if he doesn't have money to pay back, so then he's going to be sold into slavery. Okay, that expression im zarcha Hashem Hashalav is really difficult to translate in the context. What does that mean? The sun is shining on him, right? The Gemara later on will beautifully articulate the question. You think the sun's only shining on him? Happens to be that the sun shines for all of us. Obviously, the Torah is trying to communicate an idea, what that idea is. Stay tuned, we're going to be discussing that later on this morning. In the meantime, we are starting the Mishnah on Ayin Beis Amud Aleph with the sugya of someone tunneling into your house. Habab b'machteres nidon nashum sofo. Why is the Mishnah here? It's really simple. Because it's got the same theme as the Bensora Mora. By the Bensora Mora, what are we doing? Projecting the future. And judging him now based on the projected future. What do we do with the machteres? The same thing. We are projecting the future. In other words, right now, all he's doing is tunneling into your house to steal. Does he deserve to die? The answer is yes. Torah says so. And why? Al shem sofo. Because we're projecting what's going to happen. The Gemara is going to articulate what that projection looks like. Stay tuned as we see the Gemara in just a moment from now. Habama Machtaras Nidon Hashem Sofer is going to be killed based on a projected future. Now, Haya Baba Machtaras V'Shavas Achavis, and now the Mishnah deals with another fundamental issue, and that is, let's say he comes into your house, and while coming to your house, he breaks things in your house. So now, not only is he a ganav, he's also a mazik. Im yesh lo damim chayev. Now, if he has blood, so then he's going to be chayev. Meaning, if you don't have the right to kill him. Now, we know there's such a ganav that exists. The Torah says, I read the psukim. Right? If the sun is shining on him, I don't expect us to know what that means yet. Although, if you've done the Gemara already, you know what the answer is. But this, if there's a situation where he's not chayev misa, so then damim, so chayev, he's going to have to pay for the damages. However, im ein lo damim, but if he doesn't have blood, meaning if he's a person who is subject to the death penalty, meaning that the owner of the home, say better, if the homeowner has a right to kill him, so then he is now chayev misa, and we know, as we say through our shas, that when a person is both chayev misa and chayev mamon, so he gets the harsher of the two penalties, misa obviously being the harsher of the two penalties, and therefore will not be liable to have to pay for the money damages that were incurred. This is the principle of kimlei b'derabba mineh. Rashi reminds us over here that kimlei b'derabba mineh is going to be true even if he doesn't actually get the death penalty. As long as he is subject to be receiving the death penalty, that will be enough to exempt him from the financial payment. That is based on the premise of kimlei b'derabba mineh. Okay, so what do we have right now in this Mishnah? Two very fundamental ideas. One is that when someone tunnels into your home to rob from you, you have the right to kill him, and it's nidon al shem sofer, it's based on a projected future, which the Gemara is going to spell out right now as we start the Gemara what that means. And two, the principle of kimlei b'derabba mineh, that if while stealing he also breaks utensils in your house, he doesn't have to pay based on the principle of kimlei. Start with the Gemara. Amar Rava Maitama de Machtera, so Rava now speaks out. What exactly is the projected future of this machteris, which allows the homeowner to kill the machteris? So we have a general principle that a person doesn't just stand by and watch his money get taken. So, in other words, step number one, I'm not going to watch somebody just take my money. Vahai meimar amar, and this one is saying now, presumably over here we're talking now about the ganav. The ganav is saying, "E azina kaila pai." Look, I know what's going to happen. When I turn onto that person's house, so the homeowner's there, and he's not just going to watch me take his money. Veloshavikli, he won't let me do it. Ve'i kaila apai katlinale. So if he stands up now against me, again, this is the projected thoughts of the thief. If he, the homeowner, stands up against me, so I'm going to kill him. So that's step number two. Step number one, the homeowner himself will not just watch somebody take his money. Step number two, the thief knows that, and the thief therefore says, look, he's not going to just watch me take his money. He's going to kill me. So therefore, I'm going to kill him. V'atorah amra, imbar lahargacha hashkim lahargo. And so now, step three, that qualifies this machteris to be a rodef. And as a rodef, since he is jeopardizing the life of the homeowner has now the right to kill him based on the halachas of rodef. Okay, so we have now the projected path of what is happening in the mind of the homeowner, the thief. All this results in the idea that the thief is a rodef, which allows the homeowner to kill him. Amarav. And here we go now with, there's a number of exciting points in today's daf. We already covered a couple with the Ben Sora Mora, but here comes now the real excitement in today's daf. Amarav, Abam Mechtaras V'Natokem V'Yatza Pater. Rava, okay, you got to say carefully because Rav is going to argue. Rav says that when you have somebody tunneling into your house and takes something and leaves the house, he's not going to have to reimburse you and pay you back with that item. My time of bedamim kananuhu, right? The reason why is because he acquired it with his blood. And ostensibly what Rav means is the following. Since when he came into your house, he was chayav misa. And since if he broke something, he wouldn't have to pay for it. So therefore, that means that he has now a patur mamon. And that patur mamon will extend even after he leaves the house with the stolen item. And therefore, says Rav, he will not have to reimburse you for the item that he took. He won't have to return the item which he took because he acquired it with his blood. So says the opinion of Rav. I'm a Rav, and when Rav hears this, he says it's really difficult to understand. Mistab Ramilsa de Rav Bishashibar, Delasneho. look, this really only makes sense to me if the thief broke the item. Aval natal lo. But if he took the item, I can't imagine, says Rava, that he does not have an obligation to return the item that which he took. It doesn't make sense to me. And I can't imagine that Rav maintains that position even if he just took the item without having broken the item. Vaha Elokim. But the Gemara says, B'loshan Hashvua, Amar Rav Afilonato. That's not Rav's position. Rav's position is that when the thief takes the item, he does not have to return it. B'damim Kanu, he acquired it even if the item was not broken. Now, the Gemara is going to make an argument in terms of why this should be so. And the argument over here is a little bit difficult, but let's work our way through the argument. Daha yeshlo damim, because let's imagine. Let's talk about a scenario in which the tunneler who tunnels into your house is not subject to the death penalty. That's the language of hayeshlo damim, borrowing the language from the Torah that I read a couple minutes earlier. Let's say the person tunneling into your house is somebody who's not subject to the death penalty. V'ne'ensu. And something happens that was beyond his control. So, is he going to be chayiv? The answer, of course, is yes. Ama birishuse kaime. What does that mean? It means that who is the owner of the item? The owner of the item, of course, is the homeowner. He's the one who owns it. And even though something unavoidable, something that was beyond his control happened, which resulted in the breaking of the item, nevertheless, it's going to be the thief is going to be chayiv to have to pay for it. Why? Because he's not somebody subject to the death penalty. Hachanami birshusei kaime. So now let's contrast that with somebody who is subject to the death penalty. Now, when he goes into the house and he breaks an item, does he have to pay for it? Someone who is subject to the death penalty? No. Why not? So presumably, and this is now the argument of the Gemara, presumably because it's his. Meaning what the Gemara now is arguing is that since he doesn't have to pay for it by dint of the fact that the thief is now the owner of the item. And so since he's now the owner of the item, that also will extend even if he didn't break the item. Even if he walks out of the house with the item, he's still not going to have to pay for it because he's in fact the owner.
How did he own? Just because there was a transference of the object into his hands? That changed
the
status?
He's the owner because he doesn't have to pay for damages.
There's no shinu rishut if he doesn't lose the premises yet. Is there?
Well, in other words, he took the item.
No, but there's no shinu rishut as long as he hasn't left the premises.
No. Once you pick up the item, that's it. It's his. So it's his. So the Gemara now is trying to make an argument for Rav that the reason why he acquired the item is because if we're contrasting two different people, if the person is not chayiv meisas, he has to pay for anything that he breaks. Because who's the owner? The Baal HaBayis. So now contrast that with the person who is Chayiv Misa. So he doesn't have to pay for things that he break. Why? So the argument of the Gemara now is who's the owner? The thief is the owner. Velohi. But the Gemara says, but I don't accept the argument. The argument is flawed for the following reason. Look, the Gemara says that, yes, it belongs now to him, but that's vis-a-vis ones. But in terms of ownership, it still belongs to the homeowner. Effectively, what the Gemara is saying is the following. Don't confuse responsibility and ownership. Just because somebody's responsible does not make him the owner. Just because somebody is not responsible doesn't mean that the other person is the owner. In other words, don't conflate those two issues. Yes, it's true that when the thief is not chayiv misa, he's going to be responsible for everything he breaks. And yes, it's true that when he's not responsible for breaking of an item, that doesn't, and he's not responsible, that doesn't by definition mean he's the owner. The Gemara says, mita dehavi ashoa. Gemara says, look, I'll give you an excellent case study, right? A shoa, someone who borrows an item. So someone who borrows the item's in his hands. Okay, is he responsible? Oh, yeah. Oh, he's not only is he responsible, he's responsible for anything and everything that happens. Now, the borrower of an item, is it his?
No,
of course not. It's not his. He's borrowing the item. By definition, he doesn't become the owner just because he becomes responsible. What the Gemara is saying is don't confuse responsibility and ownership. you can have a situation in which, yes, you'll be responsible, but no, that does not make you the owner. So the Gemara says, so, when somebody comes into the house, a thief comes into the house, and he takes the item, so what do we say? Oh, if he breaks it, he doesn't have to pay for it. Oh, so that means it's his. No, that's not true. Just because he's no longer responsible does not mean that he therefore becomes the owner. Okay, Tanan. And so now, here's where we're at right now in the Gemara. You have the machzeris who comes into somebody's house, takes the item, steals the item, and walks out with the goods. Does he have to return the item? Rav says no. Why bedamim kananuhu? Because he acquired it with his blood. Again, it's a really difficult svara to try to wrap our heads around, right? And to which Rav's response is, although he thinks that Rav would agree with him, the Gemara says it's not true. Rav still disagrees with him, but Rav says no. If he broke the item while tunneling in, while intruding into somebody else's house, so then he doesn't have to pay because of the principle of Kimle. But if he leaves the house with the item, then he does have to return the item. Now, the Gemara is going to try to bring proofs for Rav and Rava. I will say this. Okay, first of all, there could be a lot of time spent on this stuff. A lot. You'll see the Amud Aleph has got a big issue, which we're right in the middle of right now, which could be explored for hours upon hours. On the Amud Beis, we're having another issue coming up in today's daf, which also could be explored for hours upon hours. There is much, much to discuss on this particular issue. We are going to be singularly focused on getting through the daf. And so, as much as we could, there's a Rashi over here which we could spend a lot of time with, which I'm not going to. Just acknowledge the fact that here it's really today just a superficial look at today's daf, and there's much more depth involved in all of these arguments that we're presenting. Okay, so for our purposes right now, just to make it through the daf, here's what we need to be focused on. According to Rav, when the thief comes out with the item, he acquired the item. He does not have to return the item. According to Rava, no. That's only when he breaks the item does he have to pay for it. Is he exempt from having to pay for it? But if he stole the item, the thief must return the item. The Gemara now is going to be citing Mishnayos and Brisos, which seemingly are going to support one over the other. Tanan. We start with our very Mishnah. Look at our Mishnah. What was the example in the Mishnah? The example of the Mishnah is when the thief broke the item. What's the simple inference from the Mishnah? If the thief didn't break the item, so of course he has to return it. Time of Deshiba, Dechi ain lo dam im pater, ha not alone. If you take the item, so you're not exempt, you're going to have to return the item. So isn't our Mishnah going to be a clear proof for Rava? The Gemara says not necessarily. Hu adin dafila not al nami. No, the exemption would be true even if he took it. Vahadika tini shavas echavis. So then you have to ask the obvious question. Why would the Mishnah illustrate a case of breaking? Meaning, the Mishnah, give me the bigger chiddush. And of course the bigger chiddush in the Mishnah would be that the thief gets to keep the item even if he didn't break it. Why would the Mishnah talk about breaking? So the Gemara says, well, the Mishnah gave me the example of breaking to illustrate that. If we're talking about a thief who's not subject to the death penalty, who parenthetically, by the way, we haven't even identified who that person is. But if the thief is not subject to the death penalty, he's going to have to pay for that which he broke. To which the Gemara says, I need a Mishnah in Sanhedrin to teach me that point. You've got to be kidding me. Pshita Maziku. That's what's called a Mazik. And we spent over a year in the daf talking about how when you break something, you have to pay for it. It's called Baba Kama. A little bit of Baba Metzia as well, maybe a little bit of Baba Basra as well, meaning at this point in time, there's no Mishnah Sanhedrin that needs to teach me that point. So the Gemara says, well, maybe our Mishnah is coming to teach me that even if he didn't mean to break it, he has to pay for it. To which the Gemara says, once again, I don't need Masechta Sanhedrin to teach me that point. We've learned this well, long ago in the beginning of Baba Kama. My kamashwan adamu la'olam tanina adamu la'olam bein b'shogi bein b'meizeh bein ma'onis bein b'ratzon. A Mishnah in Baba Kama, Daf Chavav, teaches us exactly this point, that a person is always have to pay for the damages that were incurred, even if it was unintentional damages. It doesn't matter, you have to pay. So now, back to our question. Why would our Mishnah illustrate the example where the thief broke the item? Kasha. The Gemara says, you know what? You're right, it's difficult. In other words, if you're Rav, and if you say that he's exempt from having to return the item, even if he didn't break the item, why would the Mishnah give the example of breaking? The Gemara shrugs his shoulders. The Gemara says, yeah, you're right. For Rav, that would be difficult. We move on. Mesiv Rabbi Bi Bar Abaya, Agon of Kis B'Shabbos, Chayv Sharein, Nischayv B'Gnev, Akonim Shav Alide, Isser Shabbos. Person goes into somebody's house and steals their wallet on Shabbos. So, if the theft happens before the Hotza'ah, so we don't have concurrent penalties, meaning when does the theft occur? When he picks the wallet up. When does Chilul Shabbos occur? When he walks out of the house, violating the Malacha of Hotza'ah. So as long as it's not concurrent, so therefore he's going to be chayv for both the theft and the Chilul Shabbos. However, Hayim Megar V'Yotzei Pater, if he drags the wallet out of the house, not picking the wallet up, so when does the theft occur? When the wallet leaves the threshold of the house. When does Chilul Shabbos occur? When the wallet leaves the threshold of the house. Now you have concurrent penalties, and now we have the rule of Kimle B'Darabim Nei. And it says that you're exempt. Shari Yisra Geneva, Yisra Skila Baim Ke'echad. Now exemption over here means what? Presumably what exemption means is that I don't have to return the wallet. Sounds like Rav. Oh, so now this Mishnah is a support for Rav. So Vehilchasa Deshadina Benara. The Gemara in three words deflects, and the Gemara says, well, maybe the Bryce is talking about where is that you threw the wallet into the river afterwards, meaning let's say you were chased, you're being chased down by the police, by the homeowner, and so you throw away the stolen goods. Okay? So maybe then you'll be exempt. But if you have the wallet on hand, of course you have to return it. So again, it could be that this is not going to be a good proof for Rav. Okay, so we have a Mishnah supporting Rava. We have a Braisa supporting Rav. Where are we in the middle of this issue? In Machlokas between Rav and Rava. In terms of the Machteris, when he steals the item and didn't break the item, does he have to return the item? Rav says, no, he does not. Rava says, yes, he does. And the Gemara now finishes up this discussion with a story. Rava ignavule dikra b'machterasa. So Rava was the victim of theft. Robbers tunneled into his property, took his rams. Robbers, thieves. Yeah, right. Robbers, right. Robbers went into Rava's house. I know. Right. I can hear the confusion. Okay. So thieves went into Rava's house, stole rams from Rava's property. Ahadrinu niale. The thieves come back at a later point in time with the rams in tow, and said, Rava, we're awfully sorry. Here, we want to return this to you. Velo kablinu. And Rava says, no, I'm not going to take them. Amar, hov enafik mipumi derav. Look, my own position is that the thieves need to return the item that which they stole. That's my position. But Rav disagrees. And I have so much respect and deference for the opinion of Rav, I therefore will not accept the rams back in return, because Rav says, you don't have to return the rams to me, and therefore I do not accept them. So, Danny, excellent. Tosfos is bothered by a really simple question. Rav says it's true. The thieves don't have to return the stolen item. But, in other words, that presumably only means that if I took the thieves to Beis Din and I said, Beis Din, help me out over here, meaning I need my rams back and he doesn't want to give it back to me. So I need you to try him. So Beis Din says, look, we can only judge one of the crimes. And since there are multiple offenses that occurred concurrently, we can only judge him on one of the two. That's Beis Din. Over here, however, if the thieves on their own want to return the stolen items, so who should stop them? And don't they have this idea of tshuva? And shouldn't they be allowed to return the item? And Rava's position over here is really difficult to understand. Even if you're subscribing to the viewpoint of Rav, and even if we say the thieves have acquired them, the thieves, if they want to return them, you really can't take them back. Right? It's really difficult to understand. Tosus is bothered by this kasha. Tosus makes the suggestion. Now, in order to really fully appreciate Tosus's kasha, you got to remember Gemara Bava Metzia. Again, I'm not going to go through the Gemara Bava Metzia right now out of time consideration, but it's important in terms of really appreciating how good a kasha it is that Tosus is asking. But even without the Gemara Bava Metzia, intuitively, I think we all understand. The thief wants to return him, let him return it. Like, what is Rava saying no to? So Tosos suggests, V'yesh Lamar, it's the last two lines of the Tosos, Dekan lo ayu rotsam lachzer elim ken yischaiva b'dinei adam. that Rava happens to know in this particular case, the thief's interest in returning the item was only if Beis Din was going to force him to return it. But otherwise, they would not have returned it. Rava knew this, and that's why Rava refused the return of the item. Okay, that's Tosus' suggestion of our Gemara. There is other ways to address this issue. Again, that requires to go deeper into the Gemara. We're going to move on in the Gemara. I apologize, but we have a daf. Tanu Rabbanan lo damim mimzarcha Hashem shalav. Okay, now we go back to the Pesukim. In the beginning of the Shir today, in the beginning of the Mishnah, I introduced us to the Pesukim. And now we're going to deal with, what does that mean, the sun is shining on him? V'chi Hashem shalav b'avad zarcha. What do you mean? The sun only shines on him? Right? The sun is not a spotlight. The sun shines on everybody. What does that mean? It means as follows, that if you know for sure that he does not have peace with you, and that he's actually going to, your life is in jeopardy, but you have to know that for sure, then you can kill him. However, the default setting is don't kill the intruder who's intruding into your house. Okay, so Bryson number one just taught us, where's the default setting with the intruder? Don't kill him. Unless you know for sure he's going to come kill you. Tanya Yidach, the Gemara quotes another Bryson. And here what we're doing now is that we're quoting the same pasuk, but what we're doing is we're focusing now on the phrase after Imzarcha Hashem HaShalav. Meaning again, if you look back at the Pesukim, immediately before Imzarcha Hashem HaShalav, the previous pasuk ended with the words, Ein Lo Damim. And so the first Brisa focused on Ein Lo Damim, Imzarcha Hashem HaShalav. This Brisa now is just looking at Imzarcha Hashem HaShalav, which is followed immediately by the words, Damim Lo. So, what is this now second Brisa going to do? Thank you. What is the second Brisa going to do? Tanya Yidach. Im zarcha Hashem HaShalav damim lo v'chi Hashem HaShalav bilvad zarcha ela. Im bar lecha k'shem HaShiyesh lo shalom imach al targuhu. If you know for sure that there's peace between you and the intruder, don't kill him. If he imlav hargayu, otherwise you kill him. So now, where's the default setting in this Brisa? Someone is intruding into your house. You don't know anything. You don't know otherwise. You kill the intruder as he's coming into your house. So, kashya stama stama. So, the Gemara says now, these two Brises obviously are giving us different default settings of what should I do with the intruder. So Lokasha, the Gemara says, it's not difficult. Kan, be'aval aben kan be'ben alav. Says the Gemara, the difference is who the intruder is. If the intruder is dad, real rachmanus, dad is out of money, dad desperately needs money. So what does he turn to? He turns to his son, knowing that his son is not ready to give him the money, so he breaks into his son's house in order to steal from his son. The Gemara says, under those circumstances, the son knows that dad's not going to kill him. Parents are hardwired not to kill their children. Right. I know. As a long-time parent, I know. But parents are hardwired not to kill their children. Thank you. Okay. I'm not the only long-time parent here. Okay, so parents are hardwired not to kill their children. And so therefore, when dad enters into the son's house, the son knows that his life is not in jeopardy. And that's the case in the Torah where, unless the son knows otherwise, let's say the son knows that dad is deranged. Let's say dad already made a previous attempt on the son's life. Unless the son knows otherwise, the default setting is, dad's not coming to kill you, you are not. Your life is not in jeopardy. You do not have the right to kill dad. However, kan biben alav. But if the son is coming in into the father's home, so the son is not hardwired in such a manner, and the father's life now, the father who's a homeowner's life is in jeopardy. And Rashi points out over here, and it goes without saying, of course, that if it's not the son to the father, but anybody else, other than father intruding into his son's house, kol shekein inish da'ama. For sure, if it's anybody else that's Rashi, then you don't know whether he's going to kill you or not, but it is a real possibility. So therefore, the default setting is your life is in jeopardy and you have the right to kill the individual. Amar Rav. Rav made the following statement called Asi Alai Bemachtarasa Katlin Alei. Anyone who comes into my house, I'm going to kill him. I have this great visual that this sign is posted on the front, on the entrance to Rav's house. That's obviously a little hyperbole, a little drama there, but right. Right. Call the Asi Alai b'machtor Asa Kalin Alai. Anyone who comes into my house, I'm going to kill him. Lavar me Rav Chinana bar Shila, except for Rabbi Chanina bar Shila, my time. Now, why was he singled out? So Elam Mishum Tzadiku. Now has nothing to do with him being a tzadik because Hakasa b'machtor Asa. Because a tzaddik would not be tunneling into somebody else's house. He just happens to have an unusually close relationship with Rav Chanina, and he knows that Rav Chanina will have the kind of compassion for him that a father has over his son. By the way, during a service of Mechuvah, if I just may add. All right, Avinu Makin, we call Kadosh Baruch Hu our father. Meaning a father's hardwired that he's not going to do damage to his son. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Yeah, I know. Right, Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes the Brisa, damim lo, bein b'chol, bein b'shabbos. So, ein lo damim, bein b'chol, bein b'shabbos. An unusual Brisa that says that if the intruder is subject to the death penalty, you kill him and it doesn't matter which day of the week it is that he comes into your house. He comes in on a Tuesday, he comes in on a Shabbos, you kill him. Conversely, if it's dad intruding into his son's house, you don't kill him and it doesn't matter if it's a Tuesday or if it's a Shabbos. Now the Gemara says, "Now I really don't understand. I understand part of the brisa, but not the other part of the brisa." Bishlam ein lo damim bein b'chol bein b'shabbos. It's terich. The idea that whether it's during the week or whether it's or it's on Shabbos, where you kill him under any circumstances, that part of the brisa necessary. Why? Because sakadat chamin amida dahavi aruge basted de b'shabbos lo katlinan. Look, you know that basting can't execute on Shabbos. We already spent some time earlier in the Masechta going over that idea. I might have thought it is an unusual Havamina, but it's still a Havamina. I might have thought that the intruder coming into my house on Shabbos, it's like I'm based in executing him. And therefore, we're going to have to wait till Sunday. Now, I admit, even as a Havamina, it is strange. Because based in at least has the luxury of waiting till Sunday. You right now don't have the luxury to wait till Sunday. You can't say to the intruder, look, it's Shabbos right now. Do me a favor. Come back tomorrow so I can kill you tomorrow. Okay? It's funny because you don't have that luxury. You don't have that. It is a strange Havamina, but at least it's a Havamina. So Kamash Malan, Dekadlina. Eladamim, Damim lo, Bein b'chol, Bein b'shabbos. But the idea that the father's intruding to your son's house, and the Brisa has to go out of its way to tell us, look, don't kill dad whether it's Tuesday or whether it's Shabbos. Well, okay. What difference would it make whether dad's intruding on Tuesday or on Friday night? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you where the Chiddush lies. Chiddush lies in the following. Dad's coming in and tunneling into his son's house on Shabbos. And while dad's tunneling in on Shabbos, so the tunnel collapses. And now dad is stuck on Shabbos, and now what the son has to do is, not only am I going to have to deal with a father who tried to break into my house, but now I have to be Mechal Shabbos in order to save dad? Like, come on. So it's a Havamina. I might have thought, like, it's not going to have to be Mechal Shabbos for dad. The Chiddush is, no. The son is going to have to be Mechal Shabbos for dad. Tana Rabbanan v'huka b'chol adam u'meis b'chol misa shato yechol la'miso. We have two drushes over here for the machteris. One, vihuka, that is not lashon pa'al, that's lashon nif'al, or to be more accurate, lashon pu'al. But the same idea, meaning he's killed, which means who can kill him? Anybody. It's not necessarily the homeowner. Anyone who can and has the ability to intervene and intercede on behalf of the homeowner should do so in order to kill him. And he's a rodef, exactly. And as far as the second halacha, even if you can't kill him with saif. Now, in other words, really, he deserves saif. Because again, what was our projection from the Amud Aleph of today's daf? Is that he's going to kill you. Meaning he's a rotseach, or at least a projected rotseach. So how should you kill him? With saif. But let's say saif right now is just not an option. And so what do? You kill him any which way possible. So, Bishlam of Uka Bechlada Mitzrach Sakadacha Minabalabaisu de Kimle, Dana de Mamidats Mama Mono, Ava Acher Lo, Kamashmalan de Rodefu Vafilo Acher Nami. The Gemara explains the Havamina. I might have thought that the only life who's in jeopardy is only the homeowner, and so therefore nobody else has the right to intercede. And the Chiddush now is that no, that because he's deemed as a Rodef, so therefore other people have the right to kill him. So that Gemara says, so fine, I understand the need of that first point of the Brisa. But that second halacha, what is the need of that second halacha? We already know that based on Ritzicha. Did Tanya, the Gemara says, Mosu Masa Makar, Otseachu. You know, we already mentioned this point, I think, two times already in this Masechta, that when you have a murderer, so Basin puts him to death, primarily through Saif, but if not, if unavailable, any which way. Most you must. The double language teaches me that Basin puts him to death any which way. So the Gemara says, so why would I need to repeat that point over here? Shani Hasam Damakra, most you must. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the actual execution of a murder is different because the Torah goes out of its way to tell us most you must, meaning maybe it's an exception. The Gemara says, Venigmar Mine, what do you mean exception? Maybe it's a precedent. So the Gemara says, Mishum Davi Ritzech V'gol Adam Shnei Ksuvim Baim Ke'echad V'chol Shnei Ksuvim Baim Ke'echad Ein Malamdim. So which the Gemara says, well, no, because two times in the Torah says, I kill him any which way. One is by the Ritzech, a second time is by the Gol Hadam. So now it's two times, not one time. One time is a precedent. What's two times? The two exceptions. So therefore, the Torah here has to go out of its way to tell me that even by the intruder who comes into your house, so you have to... You have to kill him any which way available. Okay.
In a case like in Israel that happened a few weeks ago, where the intruder came into the house, killed people, and someone at the window, the neighbor, shot him, but didn't shoot to kill, he could have shot to kill them.
Is that correct? Okay. If I may just slow everything down here for just a moment. Okay, we have learned the Gemara. And when I say we've learned the Gemara, we've just gone through the daf superficially. These are obviously life and death matters. These require serious contemplation with serious people. So I could do the serious contemplation. That part I could do. I'm not a serious person. So in other words, I'm not a big enough person to answer those kinds of questions. No, I'm not trying to deflect. You'll forgive me. Okay, in other words, these are serious questions that need a serious person to answer that question. Yeah, in other words, these questions are addressed to people who are like an Adam Gadol, right? A great person. So you'll forgive me for deflecting. These are life and death matters. I'm not gonna respond directly to such an issue. Okay. So let's just quickly recap. We finished up the topic of Ben Sora Mara. The Mishnah gave us the classic explanation of Mutav. It's better that he dies Zaka Val Yamos Chayev. Right. The big idea behind the Ben Sora Mara. We then moved to the Mishnayos regarding the Machteres. The machteris, the one who intrudes into somebody else's house. So the Mishnah tells us two things. One, he's chayav misa by intruding into the house. Under most circumstances, there are occasions where he's not chayav misa, and as we learned in the course of today's daf, aval aben, if the father's coming into the son's house, he is hardwired not to kill his son, therefore he's not a rodev, therefore he's not to be put to death. However, generally speaking, he is a rodev, therefore he's to be killed. We spent the Amud Aleph talking about the Petur Mamon and Rav's Chiddush Atzam, his big Chiddush of the day, which is that the Petur Mamon will exist even after he walks out with the stolen item. It's a really hard position to explain. Bidamim Kananu is the two-word explanation given to us into the Gemara. Still, it needs much more clarification, much more explanation. Then, what we did for the rest of today's daf is go through a number of brisas, citing a number of other halachas regarding the machteres, regarding the intruder, and what we're left with a little bit more of today's daf, but which obviously we'll do tomorrow, and that is the idea of a hasra'a. Is the machteres require hasra'a? We're going to see tomorrow Rav Huna says no, and that also will lead to a lot of very, very important and basic information we'll see in tomorrow's daf.